Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Very good evening to you, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rates apply. That's 087-179-1032. And, of course, we're also available as a podcast and around the world. In fact, the universe, live on dublincityfm.ie. And we're going to start, as usual, with what to see in the night sky.
Mm-hmm. Where's the moon at the moment?
It is up, sort of, yeah. But you, well, can't see it in Dublin anyway. It is very cloudy, rainy. Okay. Can't see a thing, but it is up. We had a first quarter moon this morning at about 7:30 or so. And the moon is up, so of course, first quarter meant you could see 50% of the, even though that sounds strange, I was thinking it was a quarter, is 25%, but you can see 50% of the side that always faces up us. But it is up at the moment, it's now up to 57%, waxing gibbous, of course, and it will set later, just after 11 p.m. this evening, when you'll be able to see 1% more of it, if you could see it at all. Mm-hmm. And then when it rises tomorrow in the early hours, but it's in the afternoon, just after 3 p.m. tomorrow, it'll be a 65% waxing gibbous moon. And then it'll be due south at just before 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. At that stage, it'll be 67%. And then it will set just after midnight tomorrow night. It'll actually be 20 minutes to 1 on Thursday morning. Be up to 70% at the moment. So that first quarter moon, as I say, this morning, but we're heading towards the full beaver or frost moon. That's next Tuesday at 11 a.m. And there will be a total lunar eclipse, but unfortunately not visible from Ireland. It's not, as you know, we had a week ago at the new moon, we had the partial solar eclipse here, and that's quite common for lunar and solar eclipses to follow each other, two weeks apart.
Yeah, it's remarkable how quickly the moon moves across the sky. Last week it was 0.01%. And that's, if you could see that, well, fair play to you. Indeed. So let's have a quick look. International Space Station back in our skies on November the 19th until December the 18th, there's the D word, appeared for the first time. Really remarkable. It's the 1st of November today, of course. Just to quickly run through the planets. Mercury to start, unfortunately. It's sort of has already put on its best show of the year at the moment, so it's gone back into hiding again. Venus, unfortunately, won't see until next year, sadly. Mars on the other side is a fine sight in the evening. I've been watching this when it has been clear, when it's during the week. Sort of, it was clear a couple of nights, and it was quite fun to watch that as well. And it's shining at -1 now. Only Jupiter is brighter. It's over to the right, sort of south in the middle of the evening, and it's a fine sight to see. And where are we? Oh, Saturn. Now, if we do get a chance to see Saturn and it clears up tonight, which it probably will not, unfortunately, the moon tonight will see a bright star near the moon, and that, in fact, is Saturn. So it's not a star, it's a fine. So it's making a rare approach to the moon. That will be, I love this, will be plainly visible to the naked eye all night in an extremely rare event. And I think it's going to remain rare because we're not going to see it, unfortunately. Moon facts, just to sort of revise on our homework that we always do about the planets and moons and things. The moon is roughly 3.5 kilometers across. That's 3,500 kilometers. And it is roughly 400,000 kilometers away from Earth. And of course, for billions of years in space, rocks have smashed into the moon, leaving countless craters. And just a couple of facts about Saturn, as we've just mentioned, it's about 9 times wider than the Earth. And of course, it's famous for its rings, which are thought to be the result of an icy moon, which was shredded by Saturn's intense gravity. It's a massive planet. It's 1.4 million kilometers from Earth, which is roughly 3,500 times further away than the moon. It has 83 moons of its own. They keep adding to it. This, it's going back a while, it only had 60 something. And you wouldn't be too old if you lived on Saturn. It takes 30 years to go around the sun. So that's quite a long time. So it's only gone around probably twice in our lifetime-ish. What else we got? Oh, the two elusive ones. The one
Uranus and Neptune.
Neptune, indeed. Yeah, they're sort of nothing spectacular to see about Neptune or Uranus this particular month coming, and it's they're quite hard to see. So you do need a good pair of binoculars or a good telescope as well to see that. So so roughly what's happening in our skies.
Thank you, John. Of course, the sun, where would we be without it? It will rise tomorrow in Dublin at 7:25 a.m. Local noon, that is when it is due south of us, is at 12:08, and the sun will set, would you believe it, 4:51 p.m. Before it's setting now, before 5 o'clock in the evening. And from then until about 7:30, we'll have civil twilight, or 5:30, I should say. We'll have civil twilight, and then for another half hour or so until 6:10, we'll have nautical twilight, and from 6:10 until about 7:50, we'll have astronomical twilight, and from then on for the rest of the night, we'll have night, officially nighttime. So tomorrow we will have 3:49 less daylight than today, when we'll have 9:26 between sunrise and sunset, and that's 27 minutes less daylight than a week ago. Just to mention quickly, John, one of the events on the ground this week, coming up next weekend, the Mayo Dark Sky Festival is coming on. They have a quite extensive program of talks. Brian Harvey will be there. He'll be talking about the Chinese space station, and there are some events for some kids as well, I believe, and they're spread over. You get all the details on mayodarkskies.com, I think it is. And but lots of talks, lots of events in Newport, Mulrani, and another town a bit further up. His name escapes me now at the moment. But there's lots of things going on there.
You're sort of thinking of going, aren't you?
I was. Mm. And but actually what I wanted to do, there's an astrophotography session, and I wanted to get to that, but that's booked out.
Is it really?
There's a limited number of tickets for that. And but there's good talks of Brian Harvey, as I mentioned, and there'll be talks on the James Webb Space Telescope and KTEC telescopes. They'll be there as well. And there's a full program. You'll see it on, if you Google Mayo Dark Sky Festival, it'll come up.
You won't get into the astrophotography course, though. That'd be quite interesting. Just to get a couple of pointers as to exposure and f-stops and things like that to see what you need to do. It's roughly, keep it nice and wide. That's f1.4, 1.8, 30 seconds to start. Then see what happens. And then stack them.
Oh, that's the next part.
Stack them for
stacking
months.
Them, yeah.
Yeah,
but I assume you need a half-decent camera with a good ISO range. Mm-hmm. Higher the ISO, more sensitive. And if you're taking photographs of dim objects, I imagine. I'm only kind of starting out in photography, and I actually haven't tried the astro part of it yet. I'm still trying to figure out how to work the camera.
Yeah, the higher the ISO is, leaves it a little bit more grainy. That's the only thing. So you've got to be careful as to what you do. But who cares, really? you just get less pixels and things on that. So, yep, that will be a good fun too. And I've threatened in doing it. I just haven't got round to it yet. So you got to do it. Now, I cut this morning, Ben. It's a giant asteroid which has been hiding in the glare of the sun. Now, they're saying that it might hit our planet here at some stage. It's a relatively new one. It's named 2022 AP7, so it was discovered early on this year, and it managed to avoid detection for so long because it was hiding in some space rocks in the area and in the direction of the sun. For example, the flagship telescopes such as the James Webb and the likes have detected this with the more dim light as we were going, and of course with their very, very sensitive optics as well. So at this stage, only 25 asteroids with orbits completely within Earth's orbit have been discovered to date because of the difficulty of observing stars or asteroids, meteors, things in the glare of the sun. So we just got to be careful of this. They haven't given any information as to when or what year that this may come towards us, but it's just relatively new news for me. So it's known as a planet killer, so we don't want that. And it's a bit of a monster.
Mm.
It's 1.5 kilometers across, and it's the largest potentially hazardous asteroid and has been dubbed as a planet killer. So
There were three of these recently discovered, and as you mentioned, one is the biggest one they've discovered in 8 years, and it does, its orbit does not stay within, unlike the other two, doesn't stay within the orbit of Earth, always between the Earth and the Sun. So, but I think they've ruled out a collision in the near term, the near term being 50 or 100 years or so. But and they reckon there's probably not too many. I said they've only discovered about 25.
Right.
They've because they're close to the sun, and they reckon they only have about a 10-minute window every evening to search for them low on the horizon when the sun goes down. And of course, you have to. The sky is still bright, so they're very, very difficult to detect. And hopefully, there's nothing untoward out there. Just getting back to our Brian Harvey, I'd just like to reassure, for want of a better word, our texter that it's not Brian Harvey of E17. Was there any?
I have no idea.
It is the Brian Harvey. He lives South Dublin and author of many a fine book on Russian space program, Chinese space program. Very much an expert on especially the Chinese space program, and he's written about the Indian space program as well and other subjects.
Yeah, just remind them of our new text line. Also the same one for the WhatsApp line.
Yes.
WhatsApp line as well, 087-179-1032. It's great to have the 1032 at the end, isn't it? So there we go. So that's 087-179-1032 if you want to do that. The old number is it's still there, all right, but it's undetectable on our system in front of us, so we have to use the new one. So you can use them both for text or WhatsApp.
Thank you, John. Just very briefly, the Earth's good news anyway, at last. The Earth's Antarctic ozone hole continues to shrink. It's been shrinking over the past 20 years or so since the introduction of the Montreal Protocol, which was basically most, if not every country on Earth getting together and deciding and committing to banning the use of mostly CFCs, chlorinated fluorocarbons, which were harming the ozone layer. But there's still a big hole there, and this year, or this between the 7th of September and the 13th of October this year, the average size of the hole in the ozone layer was 8.9 million square miles, or just over 23 million square kilometers. Now, that's slightly smaller than last year, and the trend, as I say, has been continuing over the years. So that's certainly good news.
And there was news last week that the auroras have been fantastic because of this. So there is good news about having the ozone layer sort of deteriorating and you get to see some fantastic auroras, which is they're nice to see. Of course, the cameras pick the auroras up much easier than the human eye, but as I have experienced.
Just a little bit more about the ozone layer. It's that portion of the stratosphere that protects our planet from the sun's ultraviolet rays, which is, of course, why it's very important that it doesn't disappear completely. Otherwise, we'd all be subject to more ultraviolet rays. And as we know, that can cause melanomas and skin cancers and such things like that. So that's good. Of course, not only do we have to are things like CFCs involved, but when there's volcanic eruptions, that can spew a lot of sulfur too, is a major factor or cause of depletion of the ozone layer. And back in 1991, when Mount Minatoba, and that was in the Philippines, when that erupted back then, it did release substantial amounts of sulfur dioxide that amplified the ozone layer depletion. But apparently there was a bit of a eruption from a volcano earlier this year, which they say doesn't seem to have affected it much, if at all. I didn't hear about this. I just found out that the name of this volcano that erupted was called Hunga Tonga Hunga Hapai Volcano. Mm-hmm. get your head around that one. I never even heard of that one before.
But. Yeah, no, indeed. Now the Chinese have launched, and I think at this stage they have joined with their final module to the Chang'an space station, and it was launched yesterday on Monday, and it's the latest step in Beijing's ambitious space program. And the module named Mengchen, or Dreaming of Heavens, which is they always have brilliant ways of describing nice things, I think, as well. It was launched on a Long March 5B rocket from China's tropical island Hainan, and the amateur photographers, there's that word photographer again, and space enthusiasts watched the launch at 0727 yesterday morning GMT. That was our time, from a nearby beach. And this particular module was the third and final major component of the T-shaped Tiangong space station, and carries, of course, a number of cutting-edge science equipment into orbit, including the world's first space-based cold atomic clock system. This is going to be extremely accurate. And if successful, the cold atomic clocks will form the most precise time and frequency systems in space. So we're never going to lose proper time, so you can just tune in your clocks, watches, and everything else, and your cooking timers and everything else that you want to into that. So they've joined in. So that's the last bit that they've put in, Ben, and fair play, everything went A-OK. And I did read earlier on that they did hook up and dock with the station.
Yeah, about 13 hours after launch, I believe.
Which is quite quick.
Which is not so bad. And, yeah, everything went very well on the Long March 5B rocket. And now, of course, that moves the Chinese space program along another bit, of course, with the completion. Or I presume the people up there, taikonauts or astronauts or cosmonauts, whatever you want to call them up there, they'll have to get out and do the wiring and the bolting together and such like. And that means that that piece that went up today weighs about 23 metric tons. So it takes a lot of energy to get that, certainly, into orbit. And once completed, that space station is expected to have a mass of 90 tons, which is around a quarter of what the ISS weighs. Which they don't actually weigh. That's what they would weigh if they were on Earth. They're actually weightless as they speed around the Earth at the moment. And that would be similar in size to the Mir space station, which you remember back from about the 1980s to the year 2001. And I see that, just sticking with China for 1 second, Beijing plans to launch the Zhongshan Space Telescope. They say it's going to have a field of view 350 times that of the NASA's Hubble Space Telescope. I don't know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's better. Mm. I think it has a wider field of view, but what type of resolution, or of course I don't know. See, Alan has texted in just to let us know that SpaceX launched a Falcon Heavy rocket today. He says it's the fourth time and the first since 2019. I think it was that little video I saw this morning taken by somebody in, it just seemed to be on their mobile phone, of the two booster rockets coming back down to land. You just see them coming through. There's some people out in the field. And then this rocket appears, come down, as you know, vertically, but down, and another one followed a couple of seconds later. Very impressive, even for a little, especially for a little mobile phone video. And then they landed, I believe, successfully. Couldn't see that part because there was a line of trees between the observer and the landing pad. But they were about a mile, I'd say maybe about a mile away from it, or maybe a bit less. I'm sure there's an exclusion zone around those things in case they miss or explode. As you know, they had some trouble, especially in the beginning with them. Some of them fell over and exploded. But they seem to have a good success record now with them landing back successfully and being reused.
I'm getting an awful lot of WhatsApps and messages from people across the water. And I missed one, actually, last week. I says, I'm listening to you from work, and that was up in Scotland. So, sorry about that. I just kept it there when I came in this evening. I just missed it somehow on WhatsApp. But it's nice to know that people are listening. And if you are listening, why don't you give us an old text, 087-179-1032, and just let us know where you're listening from around the planet. Doesn't matter when you do it, just we'll see it. Eventually, if it's tomorrow or the next day, just send us a little note to say hi. B&J.
Thank you. Thank you, John. And you can also use that to WhatsApp us as well on 087-179-1032 here on Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett with the astronomy program. Live every Tuesday evening. And, of course, not forgetting, live on the web, dublincityfm.ie.
Now, I missed this one, Ben, from last year, from the 24th of December last year. Seemingly a meteorite hit Mars' surface, and the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter was able to take a picture of the newly formed crater, and it was detected, it was so large that it shook Mars and gave a seismic reading as well. So the hole that it dug and spewed up into the planet's surface was 150 meters wide and about 21 meters deep. Not quite as big as the Arizona one, but still enough to scatter a lot of the underneath surface layers of the planet's surface, triggering the magnitude 4 tremors, which were detected by NASA's InSight spacecraft, which landed on the planet 4 years ago. Some 2,200 miles away, and it detected this tremor in the magnitude 4, so it was a fair bang or whack as it hit. So they're going to investigate this as they sort of watch and just sort of get the photographs a little bit closer and see what's in the regolith belonging to Mars. Which will be interesting to see the results of that, because you never know, life could be below the surface.
Thank you, John. Speaking of Mars, staying with Mars for a moment, I see that the plans for the sample return mission are going ahead. As you know, the Perseverance rover is taking some samples, and they've decided on a little spot where they're going to drop the samples. Nice place that's flat and free of obstacles, so that when, in 10 years or so, when another little lander comes along and will pick them up and fly them back into orbit around Mars, and then they'll be on the way back to Earth for analysis. So this is a joint mission between NASA and Europe, and the next step is to return to Mars, to return Mars samples back to Earth in the year 2033. And they have agreed on a campaign to do that. And also, the Perseverance is taking up samples. It's doing a double sample. And it's keeping a sample in its own little belly or a little storage area. and then putting the other half of each sample in this collection area. So what they're going to do then is they are going to, that's in case the Perseverance is not, won't be able to bring the samples tubes to an ESA robotic arm. There's going to be a robotic arm on the lander that goes down to collect them. And so they're going to have also two small helicopters. You remember the helicopter there? Mm-hmm. They're working so well that they have, it's kind of a redundant system. They're going to bring two helicopters along as well to pick up the samples if the Perseverance rover can't bring them itself to the collection spot. So that's great times ahead. Stay tuned here for the next 10 years. We'll keep you up to date. Next 11 years, in fact, on the sample return mission. Mm. And that'll be the first time samples will have gone to another planet, taken some samples, some rocks, some dust, and brought them back. All good.
There you go. There's just when I said we're getting a few WhatsApp messages in, here's one in. You're making my Tuesday nights at work more bearable. There you go. And a couple of kisses at the end of that. So, yep, it's great to have pals around the system. There you go. Yeah.
You say where they're texting from?
Oh, it is. It's in Scotland.
Oh, Scotland.
Yeah, I know. It's an area that I know very well.
All right.
And it's just nice because I was just came out of the blue last week, or was it the week before? Anyway, it doesn't really matter. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And now they're just a quick announcement just to see. And WhatsApp does work as well as text, so there you go. Uh-huh. Do you remember the capstone launch, just before we go? This was launched in June the 28th, and normally it would take 3 or 4 days to get to the moon. But this one is taking about 6 months, so thereabouts. It's still about 2 weeks away from it as well. It's been flying solo in space for over 100 days at this stage, 125 days since launch, and 119 days since separation of its mummy ship, or the mothership. And the primary mission objective is to demonstrate autonomous spacecraft-to-spacecraft navigation that will allow future spacecraft to determine their location in space and without relying on exclusively tracking from Earth. So that's what the Capstone mission is doing. We'll be keeping an eye on that one as it gets closer. When this time next week, it'll only have a week, and then the week after it'll be there. So with a bit of luck, we'll have a bit more news on that.
Thank you, John. Just getting back to the ISS. It's undergoing a series of morning passes at the moment, but tomorrow morning's is not a very sociable time for me anyway, about 5:45, 5:45 a.m.
Oops.
Not for me, but we'll keep you up to date here in future of all goings on around the universe. That's all the time we have this evening. Thank you, John, for that, and to James Sweeney for making the show available as a podcast, and the people here who put it also make podcasts of this program, and of course to Conor Lennon also. He puts it up on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, we have Threads with Brian Lynott, and then 11 o'clock, Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood, and at midnight to 2 a.m., a program called After Hours with Dave Barry, with his mix of jazz, blues, and soul until 2 a.m. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
See you next week. Bye-bye. Bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.